Hello and welcome to episode 283 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, the writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And a man who is 21 years old this very day.
It is today, isn't it, I suppose, yeah.
It's Tony Esmond. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much to you two for some lovely birthday presents.
Give him the bumps.
What did you say?
I wonder where that originated from. The bumps.
What?
The bumps.
I don't know. You're not allowed. They got banned because apparently children were being crippled across the nation, weren't they, from the bumps?
Were they really?
I don't know. I think teachers just made that up.
Oh. It came from a more sort of friendly act and then they added the pee in.
Never get involved in anything where there's a pee, where there's pee involved.
Guess what, folks? There's no guest this week.
Yeah.
You've probably already guessed that. Anyway.
I always make a joke that someone would make a face at near the start of the show.
At some point during the show, you drop a butcher.
I did a couple of good jokes where we came on.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which would get you kicked off social media.
Unfortunately, the joke counts is used up now. So if you're waiting for jokes, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, there will be nothing amusing or entertaining about the next 90 minutes. That's what we're saying. So welcome to the show. Yeah. We're glad you're here. If this is your first episode, just be prepared.
We were recording a bit late because we were mucking about.
Yeah, we weren't mucking about. We were
counselling Dan.
We were talking about comics, which is what we do, and we probably said a lot of things that we should have said in the main show, but.
Well, fucking hell, I hope not.
There's a bit of planning as well. We had to plan like what we're doing over Christmas because there's quite a few fun shows we got lined up.
And
we have to work out the kinks on that.
The end of 2020.
Got the quiz coming up.
Yeah.
Champion Vince retain the championship belt.
Yes. I'm totally going to create those cardboard tag team belts, Dan. I'm going to send you one. Yes. Yes.
I think we should do that one. I know it'd be an audio podcast, but I think it's going to be worth doing it with the camera on if we can work it.
Okay.
That one,
I'll give it a go.
It's quite fun because I've got a visual image of last year of you two being like, oh my god, and like the lot from that comic smell like quite tense in their room together.
I think that's a good idea, and here's why I think it is.
Stop the cheating.
Exactly.
There's no way you can cheat on those questions.
Yeah.
No, nah, you specific. Can't really just go to it, can you? It's a different. Yeah, I'll try and make it that way. Yeah.
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 Yeah. The way we faff over the answers, people probably don't think we.
No, we didn't cheat on that. Yeah, we
don't know what we're talking about. But yes, December is upon us. The end of 2020 is in sight. And we're going to have some fun to sign off this year in grand style. We will, of course, have our end of year look back at the comics, the great comics that we've been checking out over this year and the creators that have been doing them. And also we'll have our end of year quiz, which has become a thing now.
Mm.
So...
Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas. Hey, look at you. You said there weren't any more jokes, Dan.
I lied.
Oh.
He was telling the truth, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've got a cock joke coming up in a minute, so
can't wait.
Hold your horses for that.
Yeah, really?
Excited?
Yeah. I did say it last week, but I still think there's some laughs there.
You can't say the same joke week after week. Oh, I suppose you are
I've
a dad.
Been saying the same joke 5.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you've been saying the same joke 5 hours.
Yeah, when you've come in my eye.
Here we go. Yes, we are the soothing balm of nonsense, comics nonsense that will get you through the next few weeks of the year. Because it's been a hell of a year, but we're going to make you laugh. We're gonna entertain
Talk
the
about
fuck
some great
out
comics.
Of you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's been a weird year. It's just a big gaping black hole of a year, isn't it? It's sort of.
Shit.
Yep. There's going to be terrible dad jokes from Dan Butcher. Probably some of them pretty offensive. Yeah. Tony's losing the will to exist.
I'm like the Stephen Fry of this podcast. A lot of classy, intellectual jokes will be coming from me.
Yep.
Before we get into the sponsor, should we set our stall out to say we're the philanthropists? What we are? What we our plan is?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony.
So we've been running now 5.5 years, and we so far have only had a couple of charity events. So we've decided to make December a bit of a charity fundraiser.
Yes.
So bear in mind it's still, as we speak, the 29th to be the 30th if you hear this on the date of its release. So next week will be the first podcast of December, and we'll be telling you all about our fundraising plans for the month.
Yes,
but it might involve some possibilities of getting your book shouted out or getting you on the show even, and we're having a chat about it at the moment, but it's going to be worthwhile.
Yes. Yeah. we're in the battle room figuring out the best way to raise loads of money for a fantastic cause, and we hope you join us on that cause as well. It's been a hell of a year, but there are always people in need, and we're going to do whatever we can to help.
Yeah,
them. Yeah. And Tony's, we know you lovely listeners.
Charity will be going well.
Yeah, and we know we've done this show long enough to know that you listeners are unbelievably generous.
They're the best. Yeah, they're really
most
good.
Most of you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say all of them because they're actually listening, and I truly appreciate whoever listens. If they've gotten this far in, the quality of this show has been pretty fucking low. So if they've gotten this far...
I think high. I'm going high.
We did that charity auction with the artwork, and that fucking went great.
Yeah,
that was all down to Richard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Done a sterling job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Like I say, we're planning, and we'll reveal the full plans on next week's show. But it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be great.
Keep an eye on the Facebook group as well, because you might put some stuff on there. Yeah.
Yes, and probably on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll share it everywhere. Just like we every week we shout about our fantastic sponsors, Comic House. God, that was smooth, wasn't it? Eh?
They've done something extra special this week.
Oh, what have they done? What have
they've
done,
made
Dan?
You the model for their line.
Oh, I'm the model for the line.
Oh, yes, of course. We'll get into that in a second. But if you don't know who our sponsor
is... Are they sponsored by Prowler? Is that who they do it?
Dan's not a Spider-Man villain.
Dan in his pants.
Yeah, well, it was cropped. Comic House are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. If you go to comichouse.com, loads of indie and self-published creators put their books on Comic House, and if you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. It's another sort of avenue to get the hard copies of your books out and in the public's eye, as well as digital comics, which, let's face it, are pretty popular this year, I would imagine.
And they're only going to get more popular from the sound of things.
Yep. And if you love indie comics, in all seriousness, if you love indie comics and discovering new books, Comic House is a great place to go to for it, because there's like feature section on the site, there's new stuff being added all the time. I'll tell you more about how much it'll cost you, but what's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Abysmal Albion, issue 1. That's a brand new title on there. Got Comic Scene UK, volume 1, 2, up on there. We've got Future Sci-Fi Tales volume 1 and 2. We've got Athena volume 4, which I've read previously. That's a good one. The Monsters Cleanup Guard volume 1, which is a fantastic cover on DH volume 1. And here's the cock joke, Kalazar's Clock volume 1.
I mean,
and it says,
dare you trust
the clock.
never trust the clock.
Oh.
I'll read out the synopsis just for extra laughs, and because I think you should check the comic out, because I've been using it for a joke. A Tale from the Future. A man visiting Mexico City with his wife finds an old-time clock shop. He meets Kalazar, a lonely shop owner and clock repairman. He tries to sell him a unique clock. Is this an ordinary clock?
Fucking hell, how many times are they saying clock in this advert?
I know.
Or land our character in instant peril. So there you go.
You ever hang a towel off it to see if it will hang there, and just to impress a lady?
So, you can find all of that towel and more on
a wet beach towel with sand on it.
I tried, guys. I tried. Derailed by dick joke, like every week. But Comic House has great comics on it. It's only £3 a month. You get access to all of that and more, which is being added all the time. Plus, there's a 14-day free trial. If you've got kids and you want to get them into books and stuff, don't worry about the filth that these two peddle. You can set a sort of a login for your kids, and like much like a lot of like streaming video services, so that you know that there's kids friendly books that they can check out without the sort of filth that we peddle on a weekly basis.
And there's another feature, isn't there? Announced this week, you can now rotate your tablet or reading device, and the comic can rotate with it.
Oh, good.
It used to be stuck in a fixed kind of portrait thing, but now you can flip it to landscape.
Man, we won't be stuck in your boxes.
Where are we going with this?
I don't know. Hopefully to the end. So go to comichouse.com.
Stuck in a few boxes.
So if you was like, say you was checking out that function, you could go to the last page of Vanguard 18 and view the double page spread, for instance.
That is totally shameless. You shameless bastard. But it's true. If you go to comichouse.com, you can check out Vanguard now.
Yeah, all 18 issues.
Yeah. I can't believe you... Dick jokes.
I'm never that bad. Oh, yeah. Dick jokes.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Right.
See, I've got a joke in my head now, but I'm not going to say it because I'm the grown-up.
We're going to talk about
it's just that way I want to say something like, and on this show, we've got Julie Tate from the Lakes. Julie's all right. Hello, Julie. Just only joking.
Hello.
The first lady I can speak to.
I tell you what, this is highbrow. This is highbrow journalism on this show, much like you get in The Guardian.
Yes.
Segway.
Talking about the best comics and graphic novels of 2020, a Guardian article written by James Smart.
Thank God for James Smart, who's decided he knows what the best comics is entitled. Best comics and graphic novels of 2020. Thanks, James.
Well, a claim.
Yeah, it's a big claim. When I think you just looked at the corner of a particular bookshop and chose five random books. No, you didn't. There's a couple of good ones in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that. I mean, we haven't read them all, have we?
No, but we've mentioned a couple of them. So we mentioned Altitude.
Yeah.
By Edward Govan. And we mentioned Dragman from Stephen Appleby.
Yep.
So they're two very good books, but where's Kent State on this list?
It's fucking dynamite. That should be in there.
Yeah.
To be fair, like you see these books, I've not heard of them.
Adrian Tamines as well. We know that one. That's another one we talked about, isn't it?
And we haven't said them. We haven't read them. They're probably all amazing books, one and all. But we've discussed this before about it's almost like the view that the guy. It feels like only recently we've talked about this. There was another article we talked about, wasn't it? Was it The Guardian again?
Yeah.
A bit. Can I give a little shout out before you continue? Summer Spirit from No Brows on the list, which deserves to be there. I'd like to point that out in case my employers hear this.
I haven't read any of these books, but when you, I don't know, it just seems like there's a bubble of where they're looking, like you say, Tony. I think your analogy of like they've gone into a popular bookshop and seen what's on the graphic novel table, picked five books.
This is the books off the table at Foyles. I guarantee, if you go into Foyles even before this article came out, these books would be on the table.
There's
in the Charing Cross Road Foyles.
All the books I've backed on Kickstarter, books we put out, they would never appear in any list like this.
Yeah.
And some of those are absolutely fantastic.
Mm. And some of the Hickman X-Men, the core X-Men titles should be on there, I think. You know, but of course, we don't have superhero comics on our list, do we? You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. I still feel like the small press...
Yeah.
What we're putting
firepower.
Out...
I mean, the small press and the genre stuff. For instance, horror won't get a fair shake unless it's a ghost book, which is... horror in the weakest
or some kind of socially aware horror that's the only other way I'll get it
rather than just a this is a brilliantly well made haunting book, but they just seem to, I don't know, sometimes when a sort of genre or a topic or whatever this book is, sometimes it's just the best that it can possibly be. Never mind, you know, you can absolutely smash like a superhero title or you know, a horror title or a slice of life or something like that. You know, it can just be, and it doesn't have to, it's some of these lists, when I read them, I mean, sometimes I love reading the reviews of like albums and stuff and these sort of like newspapers just to see the pretentious fucking nonsense that is written about some of these albums. And I just think, well, the people who made this stuff clearly weren't thinking that.
I mean, to be fair, you've got to be a certain arty twattiness to write for The Guardian in the first place, or any of these sort of culture pages.
We'd love you on the show, by the way.
Yeah, please come on the show so we can call you a twat to your face. But the thing is, and then you sort of it's chiseled down a bit by who do they probably like? You know, who are the darlings of the, you know, what they consider to be the indie comic scene? Mm. I have to say, Altitude was very good, but actually not a book from this year because it was created in 2018. It was only translated this year, so technically not right. I have to say, Dragman was very good. I think Appleby did well with that.
You said that was one of the books of the year when you talked about it in the show.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
There are layers, aren't there? Really.
Yeah. I think that the small press and what we're putting out, we're going to become too big to deny because there's such
a wealth of content. I mean,
it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger.
I mean, there's too big to deny, but at the same time, there will never be. You know, if you're looking for that acknowledgement from, certain journalists or certain places, you're swimming in the wrong pool because you should just be making. You know, never make art for someone else; make it for yourself.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what. One thing I was considering this the other day is more relevant to Marvel. Now they're rebranding themselves. They have rebranded themselves as an entertainment division. If you start saying Captain America and Spider-Man, people don't think comic books; they think films.
Yeah,
It's kind of. I feel like it opens the door for a possible reinvention or reassessment of comics because then there's not the automatic assumption of superheroes anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a slight positive for me that we can sort of take from that. Whether we could, that would ever be grasped by, I guess it all depends on the public's perception of.
Yeah, I mean the books we talk about and we discover on a weekly basis, or that the creators that we discover or we find out about. It's just inspiring to see all the kind of stuff that's out there, but at the same time we love these books, and then you'll see a list like this and just think. Oh, why is this not on there?
Yeah, well, I think we're about to hit that, as I like to refer to it, my rage period. Do you remember, was it last year when somebody decided that, I can't remember, that these three, that just three random books were the best books of the decade? Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how on earth? How many, are these the only three books you've read in that decade?
I mean, I couldn't even make that claim about anything.
Yeah, lists are just a rage inducing thing anyway, just in general, like a list, like
I said subjectively, this is the best books I've read. You can't say I've got no, this is the best book.
Yeah, I used to do a thing for Down the Tubes where I'd contact everyone who had books I'd reviewed and I would say, what are your three favorites? And you got 20 creators saying what their three favorite books of the year are. That's a good little gaggle of books for you to pick and choose from,
and that's what we do with our end of year. Like, I've never considered it the best of.
I would say it's my book of the year. Favorite book of the year. That's what I say all the time, and that's the point of it.
There are books that I absolutely love. Dan and Tony probably wouldn't get them as much as I like, but they're still my favorite. You know what I mean? For me, they're kind of like a best of, but it's
subjective, isn't it?
It's a favorite.
It can't be having it.
But you watch the sales go up on those books that make the Guardian list. There's something going on there.
Publishers are obviously putting the hard work and the money to get on those lists anyway.
Get them in front of people. I mean, you try and get a book reviewed by anyone in mainstream media these days, it's nigh on impossible unless you've got an in.
So shout outs to all the people that do put in the hard work.
Keep doing what you want to keep doing. That's the point. Don't worry about this nonsense.
And all of those people who are shout out about Indie and Small Press as well, and do well thought out great reviews, of which I got
a really, really well thought out review this week. It showed the positives and it showed a couple of negatives, and Gaz did it. Gaz Watson,
brilliant.
And it was a really interesting review, and I think it was well written and considered. Yeah. And I think we need more of that. And I thought
James did a great review of Vanguard, a couple of books recently.
I think it was really good. He kind of read it. It took a while to kind of put the review together. He spoke to me several times about it, and he really got what he was reviewing. And
there were some criticisms. He revisited. It was like, when I first read the book, didn't get it as much, and then now I've seen it in like this, and he got
there's
it.
There's an interesting quote I read this week.
James Blundell.
You know I'm a Christopher Hitchens fan, and he was quoted 10 years ago saying, if you're too scared to write about something, you shouldn't be a journalist. And I think there's the same thing. If you're too scared or too worried about how you appear to be critical at the important parts of what you should be critical about in regards to comic reviewing, you shouldn't be comic reviewing. So if you're just glad handing people because they're your mates, and you're in the wrong game. So I think you need to apply yourself to what is in a book and what is good and what is good bad about it. Otherwise, there's no point.
I just fucking do it ridiculous. For the freebies. I need to edit that, but hang on, I need to make a note.
I saw somebody say that online today. They said they don't buy comics because they can just get sent free ones to review. And I thought,
don't be a prick.
Yeah, you need to put some You need to put some money in, you know what I mean? Otherwise, there won't be these comics.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually at the point now where I will buy everything I review because it allows me to pre-reign.
Yeah, if I want to review stuff, I find it hard to do digital versions. I want the physical version in my hand. I don't always get the opportunity to do so, but that's what I endeavour to kind of to go for.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, that's The Guardian for you.
Yeah.
But
we'll never be in there now.
Broadside The Guardian. Yeah.
But saying
without
that,
fear or favour, that's the point, man. Without fear or favour. We thought he was bullshit.
If you've read one of the books on that list, if you've read one of those books on that list and, you know, totally agree with it and stuff, let us know and, you know, what ones we
need
to read.
I've read a few of them. I think they're good. I think it's a mistake to include a fucking 3-year-old French book as a book of the year.
Yeah.
You know, but can you do?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem with the best of and favourite argument, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, anyone who's listened to our end-of-year shows will know, sometimes I talk about books that probably came out about 5 years ago, but I discovered them this year, so it's my favourite thing.
That's going to be a problem for us this year as well, because we had a whole period where books weren't coming out.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting sort of picks. Yeah. We may have to just broaden it to, comics we've got as well.
I've got a battle of three in my mind for my favourite this year.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking about
I'm
this.
I'm all over the fucking shop.
I need, like always, I'm just going to go back through the catalogue.
I'd go through the show notes and see which ones I've considered.
See what we got. And which is also a joy, because sometimes you look back and think, oh shit, that was this year.
No, I remember
that book. Yeah. So look forward to that. And there you go, a bit of highbrow talk there.
No, I do my yearly promise to myself to make a list of the books I've read
and
recommend it. And then never fucking do it.
I'm going to do a January again. I'm going to do a reading list for January.
Oh, good shout.
Because it's going to be like an examination to see how my comics habits have changed from last year. That's my plan. Because I tore through books this January.
Yeah, I know. When we kept seeing your scribbled notes, which were much like the notebook from Seven.
Yeah,
me and Dan were like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Because I was retired back then.
Yeah.
I'm reading less comics now than when I used to commute in. That would be me reading comics for an hour or whatever, or drawing, whatever. But now, when I'm stuck at home, don't feel like the environment to read.
Yeah,
Have I told you my new project? It's 1,000 pages on a Saturday. That's my new project.
Oh, okay.
I read 1,000 pages of comics on a Saturday.
What?
Yeah. How are you finding that?
I really enjoyed it this weekend. Yeah. I hadn't, much to the shame, I'd only read one issue of Razzle, and I read the whole of that, and I think that's about 500 pages. Yeah.
So where do you find a quiet place to go? And
well, I got the read Razzle room at night.
Yeah.
Not that Razzle.
Yeah. Oh right, okay.
Yeah, the one I sent you the pictures of. I was boring you. I sent you pictures of
the Jeff Smith.
That's it. Razzle. Yeah.
Which is post Bone, which also also interesting. Sounds a bit dirty.
Yeah, I don't want to be that bloke, but I think I preferred it to Bone.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah.
I'm older, and I'm an older dude. Yeah. And there's a pair of tits in it.
And there you go. The highbrow bit has finished.
There's my review. That's my first recommend of the day, folks.
Yep. But don't worry, there's going to be... We've got some great recommendations for you later as well. So even though, we may not be able to find the time to read comics, or maybe we've got so much time that we're not sure what to pick, we do actually discover some absolute gems. So look forward to that later. But we also put a little shout, because we knew it was just going to be us... drinking weak lemon drink and talking absolute shit for 90 minutes.
I got my flask.
You know, have you genuinely got a flask?
Yeah.
What's in it?
Coffee. I showed you last week. You went, oh, you're a hipster wanker, aren't you? Do you remember when I showed you it a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get a flask on the go because I bring a big mug with me and it's fucking done by the first
runs out
10
cold,
minutes.
Isn't it? Yeah.
What, you're like a couple of old fishermen by the river with a flask. Oi,
blood sports.
Well, it's a chili bottle.
Blood sports. Blood sports.
Yeah. That
would have been a completely different Van Damme film if it was just him fishing for two hours.
Yeah. Well, let's go. Let's go fucking fox hunting. Yeah, that would have been different.
It'd be great if the person come up for his fishing permit and then he'd done those kind of helicopter kick. Some old boy.
Go down to see him and he's doing the splits whilst he's casting out.
Out just in slow motion. That way his face shakes. Fucking Bloodsport's such a good film. Anyway, we put a shout out to some questions and we had some very thought-provoking questions.
Yes.
And things to talk about. So, should we just go? Go on.
Yeah.
Tony, you are the question master.
Oh, I've got only because I wrote them out for you.
Yeah, it's true.
But, yeah. Of Rich Carrington, he has asked us a question. Thank you, Rich, past guest. A dinner party. You're allowed one living.
Oh shit! And I knew one you were dead. Start with this one.
I can start with my answers. That give you a few minutes to finish. Whatever you're doing. And what was that you were doing earlier? One potato, two potato. I don't know if I like that very much. You're allowed one living and one dead comic creator. Who do you invite and why? Okay, you two ready? Because I should I do mine first?
I've got one of mine. I'd have okay, to well, think I'd... about the second. Oh, go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, do okay, thing. So mine would be Doug Mensch. I've never met Doug Mensch. Everyone could say, oh, Jack Kirby, you know what I mean? But I wanted someone who I haven't met before, I thought. And so I thought Doug Mensch, still living, wrote a few of my favourite ever comics, you know. Somebody sort of, he's not out there like moaning on Twitter or something at the moment. And I just really admire his skill. So I thought Doug Mensch, I'd ask him about Master Kung Fu for fucking about 4 hours, and then hump his leg. and the one who's passed away would be Steve Gerber. I think his Man Thing and his Howard the Duck, Defenders. There's just some stuff there that just is wacky, crazy. He was thinking outside the box. He was a little bit of a rebel, you know. He had a lot of opinions. I think I kind of get on with him, and I think the three of us there just discussing Bronze Age comics would be a dinner party that I wouldn't want to end. You know, it'd be that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's where I went all fogey. Shout out to Pete Dorey because I'm sure he agrees with me. But yeah. So what about you two? Who's next?
I can go. During this week, Tony sent us an animated video of a chap who did a recording session with Stan Lee, and he had the either side of the recording. He was capturing bits, and there's a bit where Stan goes into kind of like a bit of a monologue and drops so many F-bombs.
Yeah.
And he came across so warm and open and genuine, and he was having everyone laughing. I was like,
oh man, it brought a tear to my eye. That I know there's a lot of Stan haters out there, and I know he wasn't perfect, but that it was very nice to me when I met him, and that it made me a bit of a clamped. I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was kind of like, really, it touched me. I was kind of like, he seemed like such a dude. And I'd love to kind of speak to him more candidly in that respect and just kind of get his kind of, just have a chat. It didn't even have to be at comics. Just see how what he's done with his life and stuff like that. And the other person sort of booking that would be Larry Hama. Because he's like, just such a dude, such a workhorse. I've seen some interviews with him. And he's seen such an interesting guy, and he's got like, during this year, there was someone posted up something on like, it was like a G.I. Joe group or something on the Facebook, and it had a script or something of like characters or something that Larry Hama had edited or written, and he had put in these bullet points and do this, don't do that because it won't work with the audience, but still kept it fun. And it was like, he really knew the craft and how to write these entertaining and amusing stories, but still please the corporates and tick boxes and generate money. And he seems like another guy who's just led a fantastic life. And I'd love to
he's another guy who should be writing at Marvel and DC.
Without a doubt.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
I think he's doing something at the moment. I forget what it is. He's doing something at the moment. You know, it was announced recently, but
I've reached out to him, but like he's not really present on social media. He has like a Larry Hama page, but I can't really. I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh God,
V
dropped in it from a great height. well, I would say deceased. I would.
Dan Slott.
I was going to drop him in as a joke.
Is he alive? I'm not sure, actually. Yeah. Just moves very slowly.
Saying his career is dead. No, he's still writing at Marvel.
Jesus. There's nothing wrong with his bank balance.
Nothing wrong, yeah.
I believe that, and I don't. The thing is, I don't want to say this and then someone turn around and go, I think they're alive. Which is normally what's going
on. Oh, no.
This, go for
this
it.
Is what normally happens. So I've got a backup for this one.
Right.
Okay. So the first
Ready with Google.
Okay. The first one is obviously one of my favourites, Vanyo, which I know were two brothers, and I know one of them passed away.
Okay,
I'm not sure if they both passed away. Now, this is the artist that was obviously on Stormforce, Deathwish, loads of stuff in the 80s and stuff. Spanish artists, and purely that's, you know, some of my favourite artists of all time, and I just want to find out more about it. But like I say,
the only problem is there is, do you speak Spanish?
There's a, I mean, I'm talking to dead people. I can speak whatever I want, surely.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Oh, finally, I've got the power to resurrect one person.
He's like, yeah. You're like, oh, fuck.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Another one that I thought about. I don't know why. I just Michael Turner.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he was sadly gone before his time.
Yeah, big loss. Yeah.
Yeah, a big loss to comics at a time where, I mean, just think about it. It would have been so interesting to see what happened with his style and where his books went, and like,
he was still peaking, wasn't he?
He was still. Yeah. He was. He was just starting to do his own runs, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I can books. Only imagine what would happen, like, yeah, if he'd have carried on.
Yeah,
there's a real, still a big following for him, isn't there? Yeah. I know they put an art book out, didn't they, a couple of years ago, and it was very popular. Yeah,
yeah.
I know Susie Gander's a big.
That's
massive,
right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
And like he was, and he just seemed like a really nice guy as well. In terms of living, Ian Kennedy, because I think having dinner with that man, not only is he just one of the nice, he just seems like the nicest people ever. The stories, I mean, just having like 25 minutes from the Thought Bubble interview with him was fascinating. I'd love to just mine him for all the information of all the stuff that used to, you know, all the publishing from DC Thompson, all of that stuff they used to do. I'd love that.
I'm not large in it, but I think we can hook you up around that, man. I think we've got a few friends in common, haven't we?
We're all friends here.
I know.
I know. But, you know, I mean, that would be amazing if we could. But he's just genuinely, you know, just when you, it's just fascinating. But it's one of those, you know, when some people talk to the legendary creators.
Yeah.
And they're excitedly sort of, they want to ask loads and loads of questions. Whereas, like, I think that's what was great about that interview, I think, Philip Vaughan did.
Yeah,
he sort of asked. It was minimal questions, wasn't it? And just letting, because the man has stories. He's an absolute.
He can
British,
talk.
Yeah. He's a British comics legend, and he wasn't. And this wasn't Kevin Smith talking. This wasn't 100 million miles an hour. This was someone just very, just quietly, just talking about. Oh, when I used to do this, or I used to use this sort of paints and stuff, and I was fucking fascinated by it. And it's weird. He was. He's an artist that, for me, has really come to prominence in me realizing how much he's one of my favorite artists of all time. Does that
make
sense? Sometimes they creep up on you, and you just sort of look back and just think, "Oh my god, all of that artwork I used to love when I was a kid is this."
I'd give my left bollock for one of those Blake 7 pages. I've got to tell you,
and like even some of the painted covers he would do for just. You know, like the toy tie-in sort of comics and stuff. There were certain images that is in his book, the Art of Ian Kennedy, which is a brilliant book. I could just look at them all day and just go, my God, I'd love to have that. But sadly, a lot of this artwork is probably lost to time. You know.
Yeah, it's the old story, isn't it? I know. I was hearing Damien and Eamon talk about it today on their podcast, saying about, you know, it used to be used to wedge doors open and mop up fucking spilt tea and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the great sort of, I don't know, it's almost an artistic injustice the way this sort of artwork and creativity was, and like in comics and just across the board, you know, when it came to like those sort of creative arts, they were just disregarded as just a little bit of product, but. Who knows? So that's my picks.
Good
shout. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
There you go.
That's you managed one. To get four in there, V, so it's nicely done. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're having tapas.
Middle class.
No fan of tapas.
Look, Tony, don't have a go because I had a caramelized onion hummus that was to die for today.
Tapas for me, because it's vegetarian, it's just like those spicy potatoes. That's all I get, I think. And olives.
Surely there's like fried broccoli. It's got to be like...
That's because that makes for a meal, doesn't it, in itself?
I love the brock.
I'm a bit caveman-like with the old tapas because I like food to turn up and that's mine. I don't want like...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like,
I mean there's being a caveman, then there's just being selfish, isn't there, Dan? Is that what you're saying?
No. Like, say we had the curry.
Oh, like, yeah, when you order your own dish why do people
get 80% of my curry, and then if anyone wants the other 20%, you go for it. But the fact that we all share these fucking bowls, and it's like, oh, have I taken too much? Can I have a little bit more of that? I don't really like that one.
And then some of that tapas turns up and there's like three onion rings or something.
Yeah, you know, yeah, great. There's fucking five of us.
Yeah.
Who's going to have the other two?
I don't suppose we need to worry, because we can't go to fucking restaurants as groups.
I just want to state on the record that the last time that everyone on this show and Tom Curry went for a meal, it was delightful and we had no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, great.
It was just etiquette all over the place. We were just etiquetting each other all over the place.
Oh yeah, all over face, neck and chest. What's the next question?
Okay, this
Speaking
one
of
comes.
Curry, no, you can do Tom's.
We can do Tom's one for next. Yeah, speaking of Mr. Curry, Dan has mentioned previously about the Christmas Eve read. What's on your shelf you've been saving for a quiet evening to read? Oh,
I've got mine.
Okay, you go first, Dan.
Tony bought me this for my birthday, and it's the Planetary Omnibus.
Oh, nice.
I've got that to buy for you, because I think I've read about half of it, and I've not read, as in the stories before. I've got like one or two trades of Planetary, so I've not read the ending. So I'm saving that for Christmas Eve and read through Planetary on the Best of Tony.
Nice.
Good stuff.
I mean, I could pick.
You'll like that, man. It's so good.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I got. I could pick 100 different books. You know, sometimes you look at the shelf and just think, oh my God, I haven't read that yet. How have I not read that yet? There's probably a couple. I need to finish reading up Big Trouble in Little China, the big omnibus of that. Which is totally enjoyable.
I'm going to fucking put that on my wish list right now.
Yeah, that's the. I'll put it here. The Legacy. Oh, I just stepped away from the mic. The Legacy edition of Big Trouble in Little China, Book 1 by Boom. So it's a nice sort of size book as well, if you know what I mean. It's not like overly huge. And I think I'm going to save The Mighty World of McCree.
Oh, yeah. You back that Kickstarter?
Yeah, I back that Kickstarter. I got the book, and it's a hefty tome. So I'm not gonna flick through. I've had a flick through it, but you know, like I say, this sort of the Christmas read is sort of sit down with something and just start from page one, isn't it? Really,
yeah,
that kind of thing. What about you two?
Dan's on his. I'm gonna do. Now it's a book that I haven't read since I got The Essential, so that's about 10 years ago. I read it in most of the single issues, although I didn't have at the time have them all, but I bought the omnibus of Tomb of Dracula. Well, I bought the first two omnibuses, coloured on, you know, the big hardback omnibus of that. And it's sitting there. I've left it in the office, actually, because I thought, I might read a bit every lunchtime, and I just haven't got around to it. Mm. So I think I might do that again. I like Gene Colan, Marv Wolfman.
Yeah.
It's consistent, good storytelling. It's a bit soap opera-y. It's a bit, you know, Monster of the Week.
When I picked that digital, remember when Marv had that?
Oh, yeah, you got that then, didn't you? Yeah.
It's the first time I ever read it. I haven't finished it, but because it's enormous.
Well, dense, actually. Yeah, it's denser than you remember.
Yeah, but, you know, the first 10 issues or whatever, it's just so good.
It's just good, man.
Sort of pulpy horror, you know, it's got real atmosphere and a good vibe to it. You know, there's adventure, as well as, like, not underselling it's Dracula and he's not a nice man.
He was a full-on Marvel, you know, he was one of the main Marvel characters. I mean, that run, off the top of my head, was it 60 or 70 issues, I think?
Mm-hmm.
And it was two giant size?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It's, do you remember he appeared in the X-Men? Mm. He appeared in Doctor Strange. He was just like this character. That's who I see, you know, beyond the Hammer movies and, you know, that's who I see as Dracula. And in my mind, when I think of Dracula, it's Gene Colan's Dracula.
Nice. Yeah.
There
will, of course, be what we do on the Awesome Pod. We like to gift each other a book now and then for like Christmas and stuff. So, you know, there'll be those books as well, won't they? That we'll probably talk
I think
about.
You priced up. Do you remember you priced up? You were going to. We talked about this in the first year of the show. You wanted to read it. Do you remember? And you priced up the Essentials, and they were quite expensive, weren't they? They're like 40, 50 quid each or something.
Yeah, the Essentials are really expensive stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if you want like the hardcover one. You find that on eBay, it's going to cost you a pretty penny.
Yeah.
It's no joke. Which is a shame, because they're lovely, and they're sort of like, you know... Was there like a super limited run on them or something? Is that why?
I don't think so, man. There was fairly mass market. They're just hard to come by. I've got nearly all of them, I think.
I mean, one of my greatest charity shop finds was when I think I found three random volumes of Uncanny X-Men Essentials, and this was like
nice.
Dark Phoenix Saga sort of time.
Oh, so you got the Paul Smith stuff as well in there.
Yeah. They were only like, what, £3 each. Do you know what I mean? That sort
that's
of thing.
Good. That's
yeah.
fucking bargain.
You know when you see it in a shop and you look left and look right and just think, no one ever fucking spotted this. I'm getting this now. They clearly have no idea what they've got.
Yeah. Fucking mugs. You're laughing at the till when you're buying it.
Yeah.
You fucking mugs.
I'll teach you the mind society, whatever you are. Yeah. Should we move on to the next question?
Yes.
A little bit of a controversial one. One that we've already had a differing of opinion, so prepare yourselves.
Oh, yes. Okay, hold on.
Yeah. Cliff Cumber. Why is Jim Lee such a hack? How has the extent of his hackery negatively influenced comics art to the date and on the scale of 10, where 1 is awful and 10 worthy of a painful death? How would you rate him? How long should he be in jail for, and how bad is he?
See, like,
right, I'm going to lead off, because I've got slightly controversial feelings about this, probably because I'm slightly older than you guys. I think Jim Lee is a very, very confident and well executed cover artist. I find his interiors somewhat static. There you go. Debate.
Yeah. I think I agree to a certain point. I don't think his interiors are any great shakes. I don't think they're poor, but they're just, they do what they do. They're not like, wow, look at this Jim Lee spread. You know what I mean? The storytelling is not like amazing, but
it's just a big ball of anger at the moment.
X-Men, when he did X-Men 1, and I was fucking eating that shit up.
I would say this, and the caveat is, I understand where you're coming from, and certainly in sort of later books and like with the DC stuff onwards, you know, a lot of that for me didn't really do anything for me. Whether that was like my taste, and you cannot deny the man's draftsmanship skills because they're you know, pretty much unparalleled. But like you say, in terms of storytelling, a lot of that didn't do much for me. Whether it was my taste that moved on, etc., who knows? in terms of sequential storytelling, the Uncanny X-Men to the X-Men were the fucking shit. And you're wrong. That's all I got to say.
I think he got worse, man. Sorry to interrupt.
I think he did.
I think Hush. I remember breaking, like 20 years ago, I broke down a page, or 15 years, 16 years ago, I broke down a page of Hush, and it was butt, cleavage, face. That was a whole page that he drew in Hush. And I'm like, what nonsense is that? Yeah.
There was, I feel like he was having so much fun with the detail and, like, you know, actually just sort of working on this page and the noodling and stuff, that sometimes a lot of the storytelling got lost.
I hate the way he draws the Joker.
I'm not a big fan.
It's kind of like a caricature kind of face, and everyone else is relatively realistic, but that one just, like, doesn't look like he's a human being. It's just so over the top. It's just
I had to say one thing I don't like him drawing, it's Superman's costume that looks like armor.
I don't like that. But it was kind of like just, oh, let's put everyone in a when he did that new 52 redesign, everyone seemed to have the same look.
Yeah, with all lines up the side of their legs, as if they were sort of panelled costumes.
Are they
and stuff.
All
I didn't
going
like
to the
it.
Same tailor? I mean,
there was a lot of talk about that at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah. You wouldn't. When you're kind of designing the character, you understand where it's coming from. Batman would have a fucking high tech suit. Because that's Batman, you know, when you're all Robin or whatever. But not
Superman's
everyone.
Been wearing it underneath his clothes, and he's Man of Steel. Does he really need that high collar? And, you know,
is that literally only for modesty's sake that he's wearing clothes? Yeah. He doesn't need it at all.
God, so, there's an
image. But this follows on for another question from Saul Timothy Art, saying, "Did the 90s do to the comics world what the excesses of prog rock did to the music scene in the mid 70s? Pros and cons."
I will say. The 90s, I mean, there was obviously, we joke about the 90s. The 90s has become a punchline when it comes to comics. It has
it's
been
a cliche. It doesn't always deserve it. Yeah,
it's a cliche and doesn't deserve it. When I was, you know, we may joke about it, but when I was at my zeitgeist of, like, comics infecting my very being, it was probably the early 90s and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's when I was
without
me
this
as well.
Stuff, we may look back on it and think, oh, dear. You could say that about fucking so many films that you watch. How many times have you gone back and gone, oh, that hasn't aged well?
I think it was a movement.
I think the difference is with prog rock is, okay, it was often very self-indulgent, but the guys who often played it knew fucking what they were doing with their instruments. You know, they were sort of classical level, you know, ability and musicality and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at some of the image stuff, those dudes don't know what they're doing.
No. I mean, I've said this often. Whenever I've got one of those comics down from that age, it doesn't hold up at all. It's fucking dreck.
But there's the odd thing that does. But the stuff that you find in the stuff that we just skim past in the dollar bins and stuff.
Here's an interesting point though. And Tony, obviously, you're a little bit older when it came to that time. Only about 2 years older than us, but you know. And yes, you pull those books off your shelf and you go, oh God, they don't know what they're doing. Oh, look at the draft work on that. Oh, look at that page. Oh, you know, the Liefeld joke, ha ha ha, blah, 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 blah. At the time, when you were, I don't know, 12 years old or whatever, and you were reading these comics, how did you feel about it then?
Because I was loving it.
I don't know about you, but I loved every fucking page, panel and line. Yeah. I may look back on it now and yes, I laugh about it. I do sort of go, oh God.
My criticisms for the writing, not so much the art, because the art styles do have massive followings today. Yeah. Liefeld puts out comics and people fucking eat it up. That Snake Eyes comics are going fucking nuts. The major X,
and we can debate
nuts.
Like what's going on with the world.
Every one of those comics that's come, those big stars that come back, that Dan Fraga came back and he's done his comic, and that's fucking,
he's Indiegogo, king of Indiegogo, and he's like making loads of money over there.
I think he's in with that crowd.
I think he might be with that crowd. Yeah. Here's a little, let me just play it out as if it's a drama for you. So 25-year-old Anthony, he goes into a comic shop on the day.
Do you want
some
background music to this?
Well, what kind of sexy music? We could have some sexy music, can we? So, and 25-year-old Anthony, you know, he's got some money in his pocket. He's been employed for sort of 6 or 7 years at this point. He goes in a comics. He goes in, let's say, Forbidden Planet in London. He goes in Forbidden Planet on the day the comics are coming out. And people are going fucking nuts for those Image comics that we fucking take the piss out of now. They're going, fucking hell, look at this. This is amazing, like this. And little Anthony's eyes are darting from left to right. And he's going, are you serious?
Yeah,
in his head he's saying, are you serious about this? I don't understand why you're so fucking in love with these books. But then, because he's easily swept up in the emotion of others, Anthony goes and buys the comics. That's what happened.
And a lot
of them still to this day have not been read, and they sit in long boxes. There you go.
There's a lot of stuff with the night. There's certainly a lot of UK stuff that was happening in the 90s that was no great shakes either. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I mean some of the Marvel UK stuff, I love a lot of it, but some of it's pretty rank.
The 2000 AD and all of this.
Oh mate,
Like that fucking Super Soldiers comic is basically the Universal Soldier.
It's utter rip off of it. Yeah,
it's just the Universal Soldier. It's, I don't know how you could even in any way defend that. It's the Universal Soldier.
I will say this though. What year did Dragon's Claws come out, Dan?
That was late 80s, was it? Early 90s?
Late 80s.
I thought it was late 80s.
I ate that shit up.
That's dated, man.
Yeah, it's dated.
But that's the thing is, art does date.
Popular culture dates.
This whole podcast and stuff, obviously we talk about new books all the time, but this medium is a medium of nostalgia. That's why back issue prices are a thing.
That's why they can charge you £80 for an omnibus.
Because it's, you know, you pick up those omnibuses and you have that brief spark of, like, you remember the first, you look at it and go, oh my God. I mean, as well as, I will say this, as well as looking back at some of those 90s books and going, oh, this hasn't aged well, there's nothing better than picking out, you know, going to a comic mart, picking out an issue and going, oh, I remember this.
Opening it, and then
reliving that joy of, like, you know, when you find like those old issues, or you have a new opinion of them going back. Like when I was picking up lots of Eagle issues and stuff, when I was reading it at the time, I didn't really care for Doomlord, but I was fucking reading through that shit going, this is great.
But I also get out of it because of the fact that, like, you know, is that the photo story as well? Seeing the photos, I think they're obviously having a massive laugh doing this.
Yeah.
And that bemuses me, the story behind the story.
Sergeant Streetwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as well as when you, because we didn't have that many comics when we were kids, do we? If we went on holiday, we had like 4 comics in the back of a car, and we would read them.
I read Justice League, like, I had like 3 issues of Justice League, and I read them over and over again.
Yeah. And some of those panels are utterly imprinted on our eyeballs still, and they'll just come back to us, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say as well, you know, a lot of these creators that made these, you know, had money thrown at them and created these books and stuff. If people threw money at me to make loads of books, I probably wouldn't turn around and create high art. I'd hope I would, but I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
it would be schlocky nonsense.
If I had the money, I think I would like get someone to help me write, to put out the best quality books you can, and like to kind of understand where your weaknesses are.
I mean, let's not forget, I mean, like, you know, there was Rob Liefeld, obviously created all these characters. He got fucking Alan Moore to write Superman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You know,
deny that.
Yeah, fucking Alan Moore came back to like superheroes to write Supreme. What?
Yeah.
I know.
It's nuts.
Oh, dear. It's pretty good as well. Anyway, so...
Should we do one more? I think we've got one more left, haven't we?
Okay.
Okay, so thank you for this question, Sam Hardacre. Desert Island Books. I think it's a few years since we did our Desert Island Books one, didn't we?
Oh, God.
Do you remember?
Do
you remember I said we all went a bit mad, didn't we? And I made a brothel out of coconut women and had sex with them.
Yeah.
And I think Nick Brokenshaw drew a picture of one of them for me, which is very nice of him. So Desert Island Books. If you were stranded on an island and can only have three comic books to keep you entertained, what would they be? Anything goes, graphic novel, single issues, if it's a comic, it counts. I went for stories, is the way I went with it.
Okay.
And so I go first because it'll come as no surprise to anyone.
Go on.
Cerebus.
Oh, yeah, okay.
If I could get away with taking the whole of Cerebus with me,
house out of it.
You could, yeah. I'm a big, he's got some fucking pretty mad opinions, you know, and I was only just today studying his, I think he kept offering money to Jeff Smith to have a fight with him or something.
Oh,
he said he'd hire a venue or something. Yeah, which is quite interesting. So I'd read Cerebus. I would take with me probably my favourite comic run of all time, which is the Dark Phoenix saga.
Okay.
I just worship them and that. And going back to that, Wolverine in the Sewers was a comic that got taken on holiday with me and read, and I was obsessed with. And I, you know, forever a John Byrne fan. And the other one I would read would be the Fourth World stories, so the New Gods and all that sort of thing. That's where I'd go with that. I've got, I think, four or five hardbacks at DC put out. Yeah, the Fourth World Omnibus. And they're nice, sort of nice light hardbacks, but so densely stored, you know, some real ideas in there. It's Kirby firing on absolute all cylinders. Not all of it works because, you know, he was kind of given free rein, but the ideas and the designs and stuff is still stuff that people go back and back and back to. You've only got to look at Mr. Miracle from a couple of years ago and all that sort of thing. Yeah, constant. So that's what I would do. Okay, you guys.
Go Vince.
Okay, I would actually, two of them would be runs that I haven't read. I would pick Strangers in Paradise.
Okay. Have you read that? Sorry, I can't remember.
I've never read any of that.
What if you hated it?
Well, yeah. This is the thing.
Stick it on the fire.
Exactly. If I read it, I'm going to read it through from beginning to end, and then I can carry on with trying to get off this fucking island. And then I would also Bone, because that's a gap on my shelf list, actually.
About 1,200 pages, Bone. You can get it all in one book, can't you? Now, here's a question. Because this is a subject I'm talking about on another podcast this week. Would you read the coloured or would you read the black and white version?
Black and white.
Okay, good man. Good.
And I would start Uncanny X-Men from issue one and just keep going. That'd surely keep you going, wouldn't it?
So you'd do the all new X-Men onwards, so giant size onwards, or would you do the original run, the original?
I'd start from Uncanny X-Men one. Because did it renumber when giant size?
No, it carried on.
Well, there you go. Then start at one.
Would you read from the Kirby stuff onwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
The way up until probably, you know, for a bit of fun, whenever Uncanny X-Men stopped, if you know what I mean. I know it's back. I know it's back, you know, and it's been back several times or whatever. But
I reckon there's a good run up until about 300 and something. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I keep you going, P.
Yeah, exactly.
And then hard day shelling coconuts. You can come back to that by the campfire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pull through.
There you go. That's mine. There was even mine a bit of rationale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be Elemental Sex Special issues 1, 2, 3. Mic drop.
Did you have sex with a dolphin in one of them?
I don't know.
Is it on the cover? God, you're not going for tips, are you, Dan?
Now, on the cover, there's a picture of the green woman who looks a bit like She-Hulk having sex with a dolphin, sort of, you know, kind of swimming with it. I guess they wouldn't put that image on the cover if that was actually the case.
No, but isn't her boyfriend like a were dolphin or something?
Yeah, something like that.
What is happening?
It's happening.
There's full-up, close-up brown eye in that, isn't there?
Oh.
I can't recall. I'll see if I can... What about a Christmas read-through of Elemental Sex Special? To eBay.
You know, it's never been reprinted, is it? Because he's fallen out with the bloke who owns Kimiko or something. Won't let them reprint it.
Okay.
So Elementals. I think Elementals, to me, is always one of those books that people will discover at some point and go hipster nuts on. Because it's a really good run. There's two series of it. There's three series of it. And the first two series are really good.
I can remember reading an issue where one of the characters, the stone character guy, has died. And then, like, a middle-aged man who's died and in his coffin comes back as that character. And I was like, that's a fucking great idea. But I didn't get to read any after that. So I'd love to read the whole run. But maybe next when the comic marts open up, I can start ploughing through Elementals.
And yeah.
How many issues were there of this? Was this about one a year?
No, well, the sex special, there was a few towards the end of the run, but it started out as almost monthly. You know, it was like back then. Yeah. You know, they tried their best. I think it was, God, I don't know how many, maybe 50 or 60, something like that, maybe.
That was basically just to pull in a few quid, wasn't it, the sex specials?
I guess so, yeah.
Then issue they did two is £45 like on eBay.
Oh, okay.
Plus £12.60 postage.
What, Elementals?
Yeah. There's one here. Elementals number one, Sizzling Sex Special Gold Edition. That's £12.71.
That's not too bad.
£16.30 postage. And there's a green lady having sex with a dolphin on the cover.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's on the clock. Yeah.
What more do you need to say?
Yeah, what can you say?
I mean...
Oh, there we go. There's one here from France, and they've got all four for £17.91 plus fiver.
Oh, there you go. That's all right.
There you go. That's all right.
The first
Merry
of
Christmas,
the normal series, the
everyone.
First, the first five issues were traded. I think you can get a trade of it quite cheaply as well. The first one. It's really good. It's like a subversion of the Fantastic Four. It's because the boy who's, I can't remember their names now, but whoever he was, the sort of almost like the Thing parallel character, wasn't he? He was an adult but stuck in a child's body. So it was all, there's a couple of dodgy moments around that, to be fair. So now as I remember, oh, but
Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
Yeah.
That drawing's really bad upon reflection of that. Where's her ear?
Yeah, that's when Willingham had long stopped doing it. There's a couple of like really dodgy issues towards the end. I think it's Elementals versus Vampires or something like that.
Okay.
And it's, I don't know who was involved from the original series on it, and it's a bit, but do you remember it was who did we have on who used to be an editor at Vertigo? Shelley Bond. That was one of her first jobs, wasn't it? She worked at Kimiko. She was an intern at Kimiko, and she always had something to do with Elementals.
Interesting.
Can I just ask, what the fuck is going on with this episode?
I don't know.
Well, it's when it's ever the three of us, we're all over the shop like fucking fire roast.
What were your other issues, Dan?
He's got many issues, my friend.
Understand three. What, issue one, issue two, issue three? You can take three things.
Oh, standing ovation to Mr. Butcher.
Well, let me like pose it. Let's pose a question that I posed on the Facebook group then, because I think we've still got some time, haven't we?
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone was really good on this question, actually. I put it on the Facebook group. I'm not sure if you saw it. And one of the things I said was, are we shamed into backing Kickstarters? Essentially was where I was going with
it.
Do we back Kickstarters that we wouldn't otherwise just go and buy?
This is, hand them high, honestly, I only back Kickstarters that I'm interested in.
Okay.
If you put a Kickstarter out and I don't feel like it's really my cup of tea, I won't do it. Your bonus points for like if you're in the kind of community, I'll look at it more favorably. But if this case is about like, I know you got a Kickstarter about making tables, I was like, well, that's not for me.
Do you feel pressure to back stuff sometimes? I think that's the question.
I can understand that. Yeah, I can understand that there's the pressure. I'll help retweet it and I like it and I do whatever, but. I can't. I've done it before, and I'm trying to not do it again.
Yeah,
buy stuff you like and don't feel that commitment to get something. Same way as you walk around a con. Don't feel
that's
like
exactly sweet. Right. And that's, I think that's how you got to treat it. Is it something you would buy?
Yeah.
Then back it. I've backed, I think, 138 fucking Kickstarters now.
Jesus Christ.
There's a couple in there that probably I wouldn't have backed, but they happen to be friends of the show.
Yeah.
Not many, maybe one or two, you know, or people we were going to have on or we had on or something. Because sometimes it's nice to give them a bit of support, I think. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to support these people and, you know, support their creative endeavors. And if that's the only way it's going to get made, that's the only way it's going to get made.
Hmm.
But yeah, I do feel a little bit of pressure sometimes to back stuff. I backed one, and then you kind of do get the emails, don't you, that sort of do guilt you out a little bit. You know, you backed our previous book. How have you thought about backing this one? You know,
I, a lot of the time, you know, with Kickstarter, especially when you back one, you back two, you back three, and all of a sudden you realize you've, you know, over the space of 2 weeks without even thinking about it, you've spent far too much money on the nice hardcovers or like the print version or things like that. That I have to just cut the cord sometimes and just sort of be like, and when it comes to those sort of emails, I, it sounds horrible, but you know, if they come, if it's on a campaign that I'm actually backing at the time is live, I'll read them. Cause you know, it's nice to see those creators have gone to that length to like keep you updated. And sometimes those are the emails where they've sent you the link for the digital and et cetera.
Yeah.
But if it's an email from the past campaign that they've done, I'll just delete them.
Yeah,
they're probably okay. Fine. They're probably saying the same thing, but I'm like, well, I'm gonna see it with the campaign that I'm doing now. So
yeah, I've had some where I backed like four books from a creator, and you suddenly get five emails.
Yeah,
with the same thing written on it.
Which you've got to put in the work. You know, when you've got a Kickstarter to run, and you've got to promote it, you've got to.
Got to put in the legwork.
You know, because it may not work for us, but it'll work for other people. You never know
who's I agree. And I think it's a supportive community. And I think, and don't think that everything we mention on this podcast is stuff that we ourselves are backing. We don't always back everything we mention, from it, actually. Mm. But I think
I think got the money for it.
There's a lot of creators I think are sort of new, and I think, oh, let's encourage them because I can see they've got something in mind. They're aiming towards something. So whilst their first book might not be my cup of tea, I want to see them succeed. So I think that's the right thing to do. Yeah. You know, same as, you know, if you walk around and said, oh, can you give us a couple of quid just to help me fund this book? I'd say, yeah, right. Yeah. It's exactly the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You know, I've really got some good ideas in the future. I think that's fine.
Mm. Also, if you're kind of like new to it and you're kind of like just starting out, be reasonable. Like, ask people for 3 quid for your comic or something. Don't go in saying, oh, I need 10 grand to make a comic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of...
You don't need all the rewards in the world to get what you need to get.
Yeah. I'm so appreciative of everyone who's backed my Kickstarter, and when the comic's out to you, you're going to enjoy it. But I would say back something because you want to, and you want to get the comic and read it and you enjoy the creator's work. Try not to do it because you're guilted into it.
I think for me as well, Kickstarter is a place for not amateur people, but not. I will back things from big companies. You know, I backed the Berserker thing, the Boom Studio thing. I backed the Jim Starlin book, and I, you know, this sort of thing. But I do feel sometimes that creators who are busy elsewhere in the industry seem to take longer to get stuff out than the people who are doing it as a hobby.
There's a campaign that I pledged at a while ago. I'm not going to say what the campaign is. It's no one that we've spoken to, no one that you know. You know, it's an American creator that, you know, I've had no contact with. Do you know what I mean? It just looked cool. I just backed the digital. So, you know, this isn't one of those, oh my God, I spent all this money and I've got nothing. It's going to be one of those stories. And there's a lot of Kickstarter update emails. And occasionally I check them in just to sort of say, okay, here's the update with the book, is it? Oh, no. You haven't started the book yet. You've penciled it, you know, you've laid out some more pages. But, of course, you had to do all those commissions first. Understandable, because they were for backers. Fine. Yeah, that's. I see. You're working on this book for Dynamite now, are you?
Okay. You're never getting that book.
Okay.
And then
you're going to start this book? Oh, cool.
The other one I get is I had a great weekend at, you know, Heroes Comic Con.
Yeah.
You
I sent you 50. I sent you 50 quid 3 years ago, mate.
Yeah, the money made from that book is spent. They've got no time for it because
these people are going to fall into it. They're going to fall a cropper now because the postage is going to be so high. You watch, a lot of those people are going to come back to us and say, "Oh, by the way, the postage is so high." I wonder how Kickstarter stand for you saying, "Nah, fuck you, send me the book, man."
Yeah. No, yeah, I paid for you to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's how much you charge for postage.
And it says it was going to be on this date.
Yeah.
And we're a year down the line.
Yeah, I think that's...
I think realistically, once it goes over a certain while, you're just like, well, that's fucking gone then.
Oh, I mean, there's hundreds of pounds sitting there for me.
Yeah.
You know,
but like, if you're like a freelance creator who's creating for their living and they've not done it within 6 months, essentially that money spent and all the time they've got left, they've had to book in for other jobs to keep living. And how essentially for them that means they've got to have to take weeks, if not a month, months off to make your book.
Well, I like to think they've got a section on their bank account app that says money from Kickstarter that remains untouched. But we're fools to think that, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's fucking spent.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, like they had that book recently running on there, which was the Elvira comic and something. And that fucking gangbusters. But it's like, I'm pretty sure that could have done okay off the platform. I'm not going to hate for people to hating on people making money on the platform because that's always what's going to happen there.
Because also, at the end of the day, once it's on the platform, the audience, do you know what I mean? If people are going to pledge to it, then it's their money to do with what they wish. It's just a shame when a lot of like very fantastic smaller campaigns are dwarfed by
because
these other...
If you've got like the top projects and all the ones that Kickstarter raving about, they're all these big projects with like celebrities attached and stuff, and the smaller project is now buried four pages down and people might not fucking scroll down that far to see it.
Yeah, but it's weird, isn't it? I think as well there's a few that I backed from... there's one that I backed from 2014. I fortunately got my book through because I helped promote it. I wish I hadn't, but occasionally I go back, and you know when you're a backer you can see the comments, sometimes you can't if you're not a backer. I go back and look at some of the comments and there's people saying, "I'm still waiting for this."
Rob Liefeld book's gone out, that Brigade one you're supposed to have done.
What was that one you talked about, Vince, really early on, the female vampire series, where the lady just...
Oh god, I really like that book because I got the trade paperback of it.
The first half of the story is released in a trade paperback through, I'm going to say, Titan, something like that. But if you go to look at the...
It's got a great artist on it. I've forgotten
Anathema.
The name.
Anathema.
That's the name, isn't it? That was it. Yeah.
But if you go to the it's Kickstarter page, it just says, oh, you know, I think the first four were made or the first three were made. And it's just, she's written deleted next to her name, and everyone's going, "What's that?" You know, when you pay Kickstarter loads of money and you don't get anything. And I don't know. I know it's not criminal, but I'm surprised nobody's taking it.
They put that in the T's and C's, though, that basically it's a get out clause, isn't it? That if you don't get what you've paid for, c'est la vie. Like you're kind of taking a punt.
Right. Yeah.
It's not
just
like
buy beware sort of thing, is it?
Yeah. You're not going to get... it's kind of you're buying it under the assumption this is get made, but if it doesn't get made, we got no comeback on us.
It's the put your stuff in the locker. We are not responsible for your items that are in the locker.
Exactly.
We're letting you know now so that if anything happens, we warn you.
It's the argument that Twitter use, isn't it? So Twitter claim. Well, I think they may have to readdress this soon, but they say they're a platform, they're not a publisher. But when they start editing what people...
if you're
can
editing
say
people
do,
saying you are being
then
a
you
publisher.
Become a publisher. Yeah, and I think it's maybe the same with Kickstarter. They're a platform for selling your book, but they're not the publisher, or they're not, you know, you're not supplying goods, I suppose.
Well, they've taken it. If you, they've curated content because there's certain creators they won't allow their books to be on there. So you're saying this is not worthy of on our platform. Is that, well, why not?
Yeah.
If it's not indecent or kind of breaking all these rules, there's a decision why you've not done that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, in our case, that was out of our hands because that was something that's malicious, but yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Like certain creators, because they're political opinions, and I may not share that political opinion, but if you're saying we can't have that book on there because we don't agree with the politics, then you've made a publishing decision, surely.
Yeah.
And that you
as
can't
long as
claim
it's not like something that's illegal, I think it's, certainly. Yeah,
you can't claim sort of immunity from prosecution or come back one hand and then on the other hand say, no, you're not having it on there because we don't agree with it.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think there's scales of grey. I think everything is a scale of grey these days. And I think we apply ourselves to the individual case. I think, unfortunately, that's the polarised world of social media, is everything's bad or everything's good, you know. Yeah. But I think you need to address yourself to the individual case sometimes, and I think there's a lot of stuff that's going on perhaps that shouldn't do.
Yeah,
agreed.
Like, because Twitter did that shit with like flagging Trump's tweets because he was raving and they were saying, well, this may not be true. But then there's tons and tons and tons and tons of stuff on there which is just as bad, if not worse. Yeah. So I don't know. I went back. I just happened to look at my blocked accounts, and there was a blocked account there which just sent me out a death threat earlier this year. And that tweet's still there.
Sending you a death threat?
I remember I told you about this.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I remember calling you at the time, and he'd kind of like done an IP address, and it's like, well, that's not my IP address. And I was like, well, why the fuck? Why is this? It's open death threat like against me and another couple of other users. But
I don't know. I genuuely don't remember this, man.
The account's still open.
Okay.
But
you tell us about it off air, man. Yeah. Mm. I didn't know that.
Years ago, and months ago, and I still ain't dead. So, talking about Ross.
Well, someone threatened someone on Twitter. And then when you see them in real life, they're, oh, no. Yeah. I didn't know. I can't remember. Oh, you probably are. My memory's terrible, man. But tell us in a minute. Yeah.
Nothing like there was a news story. And I think I commented saying, oh, what the bloody hell is this all about? Or something. And then someone put my at Vanguard comic, your IP address, some other crap, and said, oh, verdict, death, or something.
Oh, right. No, you definitely didn't tell me this.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, someone going absolutely crazy on social media, who would have thought it? Bloody hell. That's a surprise to me.
Seems like sweet relief in 2020 for me.
Do you know what? Any advertising is good advertising, though. Do you know what I mean? There's a little bit of that. Yeah. When we got a bit of hate on the Twitter for Atomic Hercules, we told them fucking about 8 books immediately.
Brilliant. Yeah. It does work. Winding people up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
We should weaponize that.
Speaking of winding people up, now we just want to say, obviously, we hope you've enjoyed this chat. All of these opinions about everything are just ours. We're in no way.
I don't know if I believe them, to be fair.
Yeah. I'm grossly misinformed and highly overeducated. Don't take anything from what I say. It's gospel.
Yeah. But no, seriously, if you've got any thoughtful views on this or want to take the conversation further in anything that we've talked about, then there'll be threads on like the Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. And we highly recommend that you go on there and keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
Because like we say, we only know so much because of our own experiences. I mean, I certainly, when it comes to Kickstarter, I haven't done one, so I can't fucking say anything. I'm merely talking from a buyer's perspective.
Yeah.
So
I'm sort of up to my nuts in it in the moment.
Yeah, you are. You're Mr. Kickstarter this year, aren't you?
Yeah.
You've I've still got the daunting bit coming up. It's the posting it all out.
Ah, you'll be good. Yeah. And the book will be fantastic.
Thank you.
And thank you for all the questions.
Thank you.
It was good, We had a few more, but I didn't make a note of them because I'm lazy.
And those questions that we did have, I think we could have probably talked about them for even longer than we did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there you go. Do we have any shout-outs, gents?
Yeah, I've got a few. So shall I go first? Congratulations to Russell Mark Olsen and Emily Olsen on the birth of their daughter. I'm gonna fuck this up. Sorry, Russell and Emily. Persephone Beatrix Olsen.
Persephone.
Sorry, what am I talking about? I should have done that. Yeah, Persephone. Is it Beatrice? Beatrice. Olsen.
Beatrice.
Beatrice.
Is it ICE?
Yeah, ICE.
Beatrice. Yeah.
Beatrice. Yeah. I got a friend who's got Beatrix. Percy Beer. So congratulations, guys. Well done. Yeah, nice work.
Huge congratulations. Yep. Wonderful bit of news to finish off the year with.
Yeah. Strange Apparitions, one of our favourite comic shops, is back opening on the 3rd.
Yay! So
a couple of days after lockdown. I got some mailed out comics. He sent me some comics in the mail that, you know, great service. Dropped him through my letterbox a couple of days later. And he included a really good sketch of the Silver Surfer, which is clearly doodling whilst doing all the comic orders. That was nice. Matt Strott, thanks to Matt. Matt sent me a...
great.
Specifically saucy, Carrion-esque, crossed with Hercules birthday card, which is very good. And coming to Comic House soon is Christmas All Over Again. a mini seasonal March of the Robots special from Stuart Mulrain. He's just going to put it on Comic House. It's going to be the sole place it's published. So good old Comic House.
Ah, brilliant. And that, exclusive.
Nice. Yeah, I read it today, and it's a nice little sort of robot Christmas story. Very good. Well done, Stu.
This will lead in. I know you've got some shout-outs, Dan, but here's a shout-out that I want to put out to all you lovely listeners. Christmas comics. Whenever we've discussed behind the scenes about doing like a Christmas comic show, etc., we're left scratching our head because of ones that we're not sure what to pick, or we haven't read that many. I certainly am not a reader of festive comics, shall we say. So here's a shout out to you people. What recommendations have you got for us in terms of great Christmas comics and festive and New Year comics and things like that? Let us know, or where we can get hold of them, or check them out and stuff, and we'll give them we'll talk about them a bit on the show, because this is something that, in terms of topics, we've talked about a lot of different topics, but you know, and we've talked about Halloween and different sort of seasons, etc., but Christmas is one of the big ones, isn't it, really? It's such a massive thing, and I know there's loads of Christmas.
I love Christmas, mate.
I know there's loads of like festive books, and you know, there's obviously there's some classic old ones where Santa's probably teamed up with Superman. That's bound to have happened, isn't it?
There's a great one where all the Marvel characters have a snowball fight in one of the Treasury editions. Yeah, it's really good.
Lobo fights Father Christmas in the comic, doesn't he?
But is there also, you know, some ones that aren't necessarily like from the big two and stuff, are just great festive comics? Let us know. Get in touch with us either on the Facebook or the Twitter at The Awesome Pod and stuff, because it's something we do want to cover for a bit of fun. There you go.
Has anyone ever done a small press Christmas comic?
Yeah, it's Father Christmas versus the Nazis.
Yes, Gav Mitchell and can't recall the writer.
It's a Marcosia book, isn't it? Is it PJ? Yes. Is it PJ?
I don't know.
PJ Montgomery, is it? No.
Did PJ do that? I don't think PJ did that one.
Right.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Father Christmas is Nazis. I mean, popular topics.
apparently everyone's a Nazi, so that's fine. So it's probably quite busy.
Yeah. Father Christmas.
They're probably on the naughty list, aren't they?
Yeah.
Dan, what shout-outs have you got?
My shout-out is for Kevin Gunstone's comic now running on Kickstarter called Future Primitive. Set on the timeless continent of Ultima Pangaea, on an earth of strange mysteries and archaic races, Future Primitive chronicles the adventures of Culkin, the Neanderthal king of the Skybearers. In this first story, Culkin battles to protect the all-powerful energy source his civilization worship as God, as he faces the rampaging Aslothium Moonclang. So originally published by Marcosia, it's a 56-page A4 comic, and it's kind of like in the old heavy metal style, Savage Sword of Conan stuff.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And we've got the first issue has got a cover by Prentice Rollins, who's a DC Milestone artist. And
nice.
You've got a digital reward.
They're on the way back, aren't they, Milestone?
Yep. We've got a digital PDF at £4, a black and white edition of the magazine, concept art, T-shirts, and some original art by the series, which I'm going to murder his name, Slobodan Djokonovic. Jovanovic, something. Sorry.
I thought you did really well, and then you sort of backstepped.
Somebody could who forgot to say Persephone the other earlier. Yeah, I think you did very well.
Vomit all over my lap at the end there.
can I give another shout to?
Yes.
Today is the cutoff. We've extended it by 2 days, so today is the cutoff for AtomicHercules.com for issue 3. And I've literally, while I've been talking, received the proof.
Ah, brilliant!
Yeah,
fantastic. Can one last shout out? I don't know if you're going to hear this in time, but El Marvo issue 2.
Yes,
you're gonna have mere hours if you listen to this on Monday morning or early Monday. You might
leg it over.
Leg it over to Kickstarter and see if you can put some money behind this. Because
I backed it. It's brilliant. Thank you, Tony. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It should be made, this comic. Yeah,
they said all the artwork, everything's done for it. It's ready to rock and roll. So as soon as the money clears, that'll be in the post in time for Christmas. So please consider backing that if you haven't. It's a great comic, and you have a lot of fun reading it. First one's on Comic House. You can check it out, see if that's your cup of tea.
Good stuff, man.
Nice. Okay, so without further ado, shall we recommend some comics to people?
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Who would like to go first?
I've got two. Shall I go ahead?
Yeah, go for it.
You go first.
Look at me, millennials. I'm doing a web comic. How cool am I?
Really, I only took 5 years.
Proud of me?
I only took 5.5 fucking years.
Danny, you're proud of me. Say you're proud of me, please.
I'm proud.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
You didn't say of you, though.
Standing proud.
Blow out the candles. Blow them out. So mine's by Benjamin Mara. Obviously a collaborator of Tribute Press. Not that I've ever spoke to him in my life, but he seems like a cool guy. And this is a Instagram comic that he's doing, and it's called What We Mean By Yesterday. Currently, it's on episode 334.
Jesus.
And it's four panels a day on Instagram. It begins predictably on the 2nd of January, or not predictably. There's a guy called Mr. Bruce Barnes, and he's a school teacher in a class full of horrific children, as all children are now that we know that. And there's a sort of, he has a sort of argument with one of the kids who I think says something like, you know, I'll tell people you touched me if you don't let me do, you know, it's like that. It's a horrible kids. Yeah. And so he goes into the teacher's lounge. And he starts drinking heavily and smoking in the teacher's lounge, and you begin to notice there's probably something up with this dude. You know, he's got rage issues. And he says, one point, one of the lines he says is, "How long am I going to be riding this rage snake?" Which is a brilliant line. One of the female teachers offers to fuck him to calm him down. You can see where this is going. You can see what kind of thing this is. If anyone's read anything by Benjamin Mara, you know, kind of how crazy he is. And he goes out, so he thinks, fuck this. So he goes off in his car. He gets involved in a road rage accident or incident in his car, and the guy pulls him over, smashes his window with a gun. He goes home to try and calm down, but instead grabs a gun from under his pillow, and he goes out to buy a Slurpee. He gets bribed by a student called Mr. Kafka, who looks like a crow. He pulls a gun on the store clerk because the store clerk is particularly annoying in a sort of millennial way. But just that bit I've told you there, that's 80 days worth of story. So me and Adam read this daily, and almost weekly I said to Adam, it just takes so long for things. What's happening? I don't know what's happening. And Adam always says to me, that's the point. It's this story that goes on and on and on and on, you know, but I mean, there's a whole week that's just about rain, about how it's raining. There's a whole week which is about a snake. It's outside and it's having a fight with an eagle, and then it ends up flying off with the eagle. But it just occasionally it just erupts into like just violence that just doesn't stop for weeks and weeks. So he goes into a bar and he gets involved in a fight. He sort of intervenes between an argument between this sort of big bruiser and a couple, and it ends up in a fight. And this is kind of where I started. So I went back and reread the early issues, but this is where I kind of jumped into it. And I remember this fight just goes on and on and on for weeks and months of him having a fight. And one, he gets punched in the face a lot, and then he goes nuts on someone, and then he's on the floor, and he thinks the geezer's unconscious, but he's not. And then someone attacks him with a pool cue, so he picks the pool cue up and starts beating someone. And then at the end of this months and months of fight, a woman walks in the bar and says, "Oh, do you want to, you know, you're well cool, should we go back to my place?" And he goes back to her place, and she says, "Do you like, I think monkey biscuits, I think they're called, or something, animal crackers." She goes, "Do you like animal crackers?" Monkey biscuits. She goes, "I'd eat monkey biscuits, sound cool."
Yeah.
She goes, "Do you like animal crackers?" And he goes, "What do you mean, like the biscuits?" And she says, "No, the cookies." And she goes, "No, the drugs." And they end up shooting each other in the backside with pellet guns that have got the drug attached to them. And that's where it is now. And he's sitting in front of a big TV, and it's sort of scrolling through this dot matrix in front of him. And she's saying, "Well, this is brilliant when you've done the drug." And he literally, the last issue, which I read earlier tonight, he's begun to trip balls, and it's just getting madder and madder and madder. And it just goes on and on. It just keeps going, this story. I think I tend to read it. I tend to see it in my feed at about 6 o'clock UK time. And I think, oh, good, it's another one. And I don't know, life goes on and on, doesn't it? Life isn't in the three-act structure. We're not really fussed about, you know, being in some sort of dramatic construction. And this exactly the same way. But it's just so angry and so fucking mental. And it's not, for something that's four panels a day, it's not badly drawn. It's actually really fun to read. You can find Benjamin Mara, who obviously did the cover to Atomic Hercules 2. You can find him at Benjamin_Mara, M-A-R-R-A. I've talked about books of his in the past. And it's currently on issue 334, so it's well worth your time. You can scroll back. The good thing about Instagram, it doesn't take you long to scroll back either, does it?
No.
couple of flicks back and you'll find it. He does put other things in his feed, so it's not just this. So you do see some interesting covers and some other stories he's working on and other interviews he's done and stuff like that. But he's absolutely hilarious. And once you get into the groove of it, once you're happily in the groove of it, it's brilliant. Really good. Yeah. What a webcomic should be. Yeah. Good stuff. There you go, guys. That's my first one.
Amazing. Do you want to go next, Dan, or shall I go?
Yeah, I'm happy to go.
Go for it.
There's a book, you were going to talk about this as well, weren't you, Vince?
Yes.
Came from Sagas of the Shield Maiden.
Yes.
By, sorry, cat's just trodden.
the cat actually attacked him.
Written by Asa Wheatley, letterer Ken Reynolds. Let me scroll down a bit more. Got cover artist for the amazing Sweeney Boo. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Interior art by Dan Coloma. Interior art by Kay Baird. Kevin Keane. God, there's a number of artists. We'll have to link to it. But I've got to say, before I go any further, the design on this book, and I believe Ken Reynolds has designed it, is absolutely standout. It's just so striking.
Ken's great, man. I did a podcast with Ken this week, and I was really looking forward to it because I thought, he's an absolute pro, isn't he, Ken? And he's really thoughtful, and he's done some design work and some lettering for me. And the backwards and forwards we had were very sensible, very clever, you know, and it worked out really well. He's the cherry on the ACP cake, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got the design themes running throughout. One little touch is in each, I don't know what you'd call it, like the page that tells you about the strip that's coming up. So the comic's broken up into a series of stories. Title card, so a series of stories about the Shield Maiden, her past adventures. You kind of think like Conan, you get a snapshot of a certain period and a certain time and her doing it. So it's one of those things you can kind of jump in and out of. But each section's, it's got like the five shields, and if it's part one, the first shield is highlighted, and it goes all the way through to the fifth one. And it's just little touches like that where it's obviously being considered and worked over it. The whole design show, there's so much consideration and thought behind it. It absolutely wins through. It's oversized, the book. It's when it turned up, I was like, oh, this is lovely. And I didn't really check out the Kickstarter that much, but they make a graphic showing you how big it is compared to the US standard size. And it's a lovely book. I really enjoyed reading it.
Ace has come on with leaps and bounds, isn't it? I reviewed a book of Ace's 2 years ago, and I could take it or leave it, to be fair, and I had a chat with him about it. He's very reasonable, and I think he's really coming on leaps and bounds. I think he's really taking on board what people are saying to him and allowing the influences to sort of, you know, guide him in relation to making a good comic these days. And I think that's, I'm really pleased.
And this sort of story as well is definitely, you can tell it's one close to his heart. I remember speaking to him at BAM. In Bath.
Came over for a chat, didn't he? It's quite chatty over there.
Yeah, the time him, he was working on, as he said, like this historical Viking Western.
Yep.
And I was well, okay, you got me there. and it's just, I second everything you say, Dan. And also, this is what I like to see, and I'd like to see more of with a lot of small press. It's a character as well.
There's,
over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of one and done stories and stuff. But this is like a new original character, which he can do so much with as well, based on the small stories. And
is it an ongoing, this, or is it a sort of graphic novel, or is it a one-off?
He's got plenty of stories for the second book, as he told me in the Thought Bubble special. I don't know why I paused and smiled at no one then. But so much fun with this. And it's a Murderous Row of wonderful art as well, different sort of styles that do really complement the stories, don't they, Dan?
Yes, definitely. Like, each one is absolutely unique, but
you've got to get the right artist, man. I think that's part of it. It's whether they're good or bad, occasionally doesn't matter, but their style has got to be the right style for the story they're telling. I was reading something by Dave McKean this week, who said he applies his style to how the story needs it, and I think that's right. I think you've got to choose your artist really carefully with work. Yeah,
yeah. And it also creates a character that is, like, when you think of Vikings, this character is the hero of the book, isn't she, Dan? But she's not necessarily a hero as such. Do you know what I mean? Like, in the classic sort of term, she is a fucking badass and is fully aware of the harshness of the world. She can be pretty harsh as well, which makes it all the more fascinating.
It's going to be Viking week. I've got some Vikings to talk about in a minute.
I've just skipped off the blurb, but essentially it's sort of Ace has done his research on this one and like the time period and what the elements would be like.
Yeah.
And they're all in there. So it's a fascinating read. It's an area I'm relatively ignorant about.
Yeah.
So,
and that must have translated to reference and stuff that you sent to the artists as well, because it feels like, you know, sometimes when you see a historical anthology, but some artists really go to town on what it actually looked like, and some people just can't be bothered. This one is, it feels very like everyone's got in, it feels like the same world. Even if it's different styles, it feels like the same world, and the reference comes into it, because you can't half-ass a, like a Viking or...
If you're doing the historical stuff, you've got to be on point with that, because it only helps the comic.
Yeah.
Good-o.
It's great. Nice one. So, yeah. I second this all the way. Like I say,
I'd like to see more. Yeah. And
what was
you
that?
Can see more. Like to see more.
See more butts.
Oh, see more
comics.
Butts. Yeah.
Always see more comics. But so go check out. I can only link to the Kickstarter because I'm not sure where you can get it apart from that. It only turned up this week.
Yeah, and if you follow Ace on Twitter, we'll put a link in the show notes and stuff. This is also a character that I'd probably just love to draw at some point. Yeah. I might do a sketch of it, you know.
Hire Ken to do your lettering on your books.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, he's done mine. He did the Space Warp stuff. Yeah, it's good.
And his logo on this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, so there you go. Okay, next up, I've got a book from Vault. Although it's from Nightfall. Nightfall's a line of Vault, isn't it? Isn't that like a new lineup that they've released a couple of books
from? Is it?
From? Yeah, it feels like it. On the book itself.
Well, it feels like they put a book out every week, but I never seem to have this sort of... No one ever seems to explain to me what they're doing. I don't know.
I think Nightfall... Yeah. I read this somewhere because I was interested in this book I'm about to talk about. I think Nightfall... correct me if I'm wrong, internet, which you will. I think it's like a, you know, when people do like a small imprint of like, this is the darker, creepier books, this is the little corner, you know, or this is the grown-up stuff. Like you got Boom and then you got Boom Kids and like, you know, stuff like that.
Boom Kids is where all the sort of darker stuff happens.
Yeah. I can't, there's so, too many jokes going through my head. but this is a book from Paul Cornell, art by Sally Cantarino, coloured by Diabla Kelly. I hope I've said that right. Right, I've probably got that messed up. Wonderful colourist, though. And this is I Walk With Monsters, issue one. Have you heard about this one?
No.
I've heard of it, yeah. I'm actually surprised Cornell's there, because I thought it was more a sort of breeding ground for newer voices. Mm. Like Packnadel and Ramvi and all those sort of went to Vault to start, didn't they?
Yeah, and when I checked this out, I was like, Cornell? Do you know what I mean? There was that question mark.
One.
Like, Cornell?
I see the TV works dried up. Oh.
Yeah. but this book, I haven't read a Paul Cornell book in a while. I did love his Captain Britain stuff, I will say that. But this one, I love this book. And basically... it centres around the main girl, JC, whose past. In JC's past is the important man who took away her brother. Now JC has David, who sometimes... I don't want to spoil it. I don't. You know when a synopsis gives away too much? I was kind of aware of what this book was, kind of, but only on the fringes. I just thought it looked cool and I wanted to read it, so... And I needed a new sort of series to get monthly, you know, ever since Out of Darkness left me. I'm still not over it, people.
Still the hit this year, wasn't it?
Yeah. God damn. Oh, I forgot about that. Now I'm a bit sad. So I was interested. But once again, as I always say, read it for yourself to discover it. Because there were some nice surprises, and I was immediately brought into it. There are monsters, both human and something else. But it's about two characters who are basically travellers. They seem to be just on a road trip or just, you know, hitchhiking and basically taking out villains along the way. That's such a simplification of what the book is. Because already the book does so much with issue one, finding out about the main character who, from the beginning, is tied up and about to be murdered by a serial killer. And the first page is a splash page of... this serial killer who's dressed up like an orderly or from a hospital about to pull a scalpel out of their bag, and JC's sort of tied up with her back against the wall, and she's just going, this is the best part. And that immediately caught my attention. I was like, oh, I love that sort of like that cold open like that. Like this person who essentially looks like they're about to get murdered, but they're very much sort of like, you have no fucking idea what's about to happen. And I was, I love like badasses that take out sort of villains like that. That leads to a scene which there's a few splash pages within the first 10 pages, which I absolutely love. One of them's quite gruesome. This is it's quite a gory book and icky in its own way, but leads to lots of character work. And you see flashbacks to JC's past with her family when she grew up on a farm. And sometimes they would have like hitchhikers come along, and then the hitchhikers would sort of disappear. There's lots of dark sort of things going on in the background, which I love about that. It feels like it's drip feeding at a dark mystery, which I hope keeps up the sort of tempo and pace going forward, because already I'm invested in issue two. I was just taking a punt on issue one. I'm coming back for issue two whenever that is, and I hope it continues to sort of eke out this story, because sometimes there's a lot of books that start strong and they lose you by issue four. I hope this is one that keeps up, because it's fantasy horror. It's a modern sort of horror, and it's the characters are already intriguing and interest me. It's kind of like a, even though the artwork, there's a slight sort of animated style to them. There's a sort of looser style, you know. There's a sort of caricature kind of way to Eric Zavadsky. There's sort of hints of those kind of sort of loose. It's not super serious looking in terms of the faces, but for me that works so much better when it comes to horror and things like that. And it works really well for this, and because it's a character book, and the best horror books for me are character books. So I Walk With Monsters issue one is available now. I got it on digital. I took a punt on a book which was £3.19. Now normally I wouldn't do that. You know how I've effed and jeffed about the price of digital, but I'm also not buying that many digital books at the moment. I'm really not.
So, still too much, guys.
Yeah, £3.19 is still too much, and I paid that because I was interested, and I didn't have, you know, if I had 10 other books cheaper, and I did buy some cheaper ones.
It was a sale. We bought some in the sale, didn't we? Yeah.
But this is worth a punt, and I'm gonna check out the next couple of issues, and hopefully it'll make an interesting trade. I'm not sure if it's ongoing or an initial limited series, but it'll be interesting.
I was listening to this recently. Some companies have adopted that model where they release a first issue and then they go straight to trade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
not sure how I feel about that yet. Yeah. It depends on the book, maybe. Yeah.
I will say, from the thumbnails of Comixology, which isn't how you should judge any, you should never judge any book by its cover, of course. I do really like the artwork for the cover of I Walk With Monsters, issue one. The second one's the thumbnails, they all look a bit samey. They're not. Right. When you look at them, when you bring them forth, there are differences. But in terms of like the palette and like the design and stuff, you know.
That's always the problem with digital books now, isn't it? Mm. In the old days, it didn't matter because you'd be looking at it on the shelf. But these days, you kind of scan past it, you know, an inch and a half square on a computer screen, don't you?
Yeah. And like, you know, there's for instance, there's a cover for issue two, which has the main character sort of hitchhiking, and there's a monster above them, which is a cool visual. But issue one is the main character front and center with the face of a monster behind them. So there's not too much difference, and that makes sense. I know that there's a little bit more going on story-wise with issue two, but you know, just check out the thumbnails and, you know, see what I mean, because maybe some people might breeze past it if they haven't experienced it, you know. So it's that age-old cover debate, though, isn't it, really, that we've had. So yes, I Walk With Monsters, highly recommended. I love it. Looking forward to issue two. That's mine.
Cool. Mine's got Vikings in as well, albeit only at the start of a couple of issues. So mine is, can't imagine why I bought this book, but it's called Riptide. Riptide Draken. It's a four-issue miniseries out of Red 5 Comics. I think I reviewed a book of theirs a couple of years ago, or maybe about a year ago. But they're not somebody who's particularly on our radars. I bought it on Comixology as well. Written by Scott Chitwood, art by Danny Luckert, colours by Rhonda Patterson, cover by Paul Ballard. Once again, 24 pages at £3.19. Too expensive. Yep, thank you. Mm. It's the second miniseries in a series, all entitled Rip. The first one was just plain Riptide. The second one's Riptide Draken. And it's apparently got a movie deal on the go and everything, but this one has. So it starts off with back in 977 AD, and a Viking longship is heading to England's shores through the thick fog. Underneath, through the fog, one of them spots what they think is the head. You know, they have these sort of shaped heads of dragons or sea spirits or something at the end of the longboats, don't they? You know,
yeah.
Can't think what they're called now off the top of my head, but they have them.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
And he thinks he sees another longboat, and he thinks, oh look, there's the head of it, and it looks like through the fog you see this the head of the longboat, but the head turns, and you think, oh fuck, and then you get an overhead view of the longboat. And underneath is what we all recognise as a plesiosaur swimming, a huge one, swimming underneath the longboat. And we all know what a plesiosaur is. What do people suspect, perhaps in Scotland?
Loch Ness.
Loch Ness Monster, yeah. So this is a monster comic about the Loch Ness Monster, but as if the Loch Ness Monster is not a sweet thing. It's a fucking beast. Yeah, it'll destroy you. Fast forward to the modern day, and Alex is on a fishing boat. Now, Alex is a character who was in the first series, and she's now working on a sort of one of those sort of cheesy documentary series about, you know, aliens and monsters and, you know, round the world, you know, what mysteries are there, you know, hidden aliens and stuff. And she's working on one. And there's the captain of the boat tells this story about the time he saw Nessie, and sounds a bit made up, and they're all a bit cynical on the boat. But then the sonar that they're running through the water begins to pick something up. And they're like, fucking hell, what's that? And the head of the plesiosaur comes out of the water, slides into the boat and tries to kill them and pulls out again and goes back under the water. And they manage to catch it on film. And what happens is there's a character from the first series called Alex. And he turns up. Now, Alex is working for a big petrochemical company, a bit like Shell or someone. And he comes down and he says, look, this is going to, because the plesiosaur has also been spotted at sea. Around by one of the oil rigs, and he says, look, this is going to ruin our business. We're losing 10 million a day, halting production, halting drilling because of this plesiosaur, or because of this beast that's under the water. And you think, oh, okay, right, that's the first issue. Okay, I dig that. That's kind of cool. And it's kind of, to me, it's a little bit like the Loch Ness Monster does Cthago. It's a bit like that. There's a touch of that somewhere in it. But then issue two just goes fucking mental. So you've got a plesiosaur charging down the high street of Inverness eating people. You know, it's just brilliant. I just thought, this is so refreshing. You know, full in daylight, killing people down the high street. And they chase it through the rivers, and they're chasing this thing, trying to catch it on film again. And there's all these locals who are now filming it. And of course, the secret's out. So they head out, saying, right, we're going to head out to the oil rig, which is where we saw it before, and I think it's the second or the third issue. And they head out to the oil rig, and a plesiosaur appears, and issue three kind of ends with someone going, the one we saw didn't have those scars on its face. And you realise there's a load of them, and you think, fucking, where is this going? And it's really good. It's from a company I've never heard of before. You know, not really, you know, not a big company, but the art reminded me of a less accomplished, slightly less rendered version of the art we saw in Surface Tension from Jason.
Yes, okay.
It's got that sort of full colour English folk, but you know, it's well drawn. You can tell who everyone is. It's not quite Cthago level detail or, you know, accomplishment or anything like that, but it's good, solid art. I think the colouring could do with some help. It's a bit too everything's all different colors. I think it needs someone to say, look, pull back, think of a theme, look at what we're doing. You know, this is the Highlands of Scotland, and we could do with some mist covered mountains. And you know, I think there's something to be said for someone needs a little bit of a, like we had before in previous books, a little bit of an overview, a bit of an editorial overview that, you know, it needs to be tonally more constructed. But it is really good. I'm definitely on board. I read the first three issues. The fourth issue is out soon. And then I went back and reread the first series, which is about a big tsunami. But it's done really cleverly. So really good. There's some great writing on show in this one. So that's just on Comixology. And it's by Red 5 comics. There you go.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So I'll probably be picking that up and reading that soon. Oh. Well, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, folks. It was definitely fun. We talked about so much I've kind of forgotten what we've talked about. It's been one of those episodes. It's been one of those weeks, one of those years. But we hope you have enjoyed it. If there's anything that we've talked about or want to get in touch with us and, you know, let us know some Christmas comics, etc. There's several ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be shouting out about, you know, upcoming topics, how the rest of the year is going to go on, maybe throwing some shade when it comes to the end of year quiz. No, we won't. Maybe, you know. Well, Dan Butcher will do all the trash talking. Wait, Dan.
Don't need to.
No.
Securing our victory, Vince.
There you go.
Yeah, because we were so certain last year, weren't we?
Yeah. Unwavering, steady.
Yeah.
No panicking.
No, there was no panicking whatsoever.
My arsehole was going 5p, 50p.
Did someone just fall over?
It's the cats fucking about in the room.
Oh, God. Where'd you get all this shit from, Dan? Oh, dear. Anyway, if you use Facebook, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Join the Facebook group that we've talked about a few times here, Awesome Comics Talk. It's a wonderful community-led Facebook page. People just talking about comics and comic topics and just everything in general. There's no hard selling, no cross-pollination in terms of marketing and stuff. And it's just a good time. And there's lots of there'll probably be lots of Christmassy stuff going on.
We've got a Christmas draw-off going on.
Get on board that.
That's fantastic. We all swap pictures on Christmas Eve. Adds a little festive.
We're going with a few more people on that, actually. Yeah. There's,
usually it's fucking nuts. So
Is Brandon still doing that?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, I need
people
to jump,
say, I wish I'd have done this now. So get on it.
Brandon Muir, thank you very much. You're an absolute legend.
Thanks,
for doing that with us. Good lad. But, and it's a good time. So, yes, join the group for that if you want to do some drawing at Christmas. And it's just awesome. It really is. It's good fun. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, I've still got iTunes in the fucking notes. I almost got that wrong again. Thank you very much. Subscribe and leave a review. It helps get the word out about this show and all the indie books that we talk about, which is what it's all about, really. And if you listen to us on other networks, like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod. I'm sorry, did some go in your mouth?
Oh, dear. I mean, you can tell with that cadence he said it before.
Yeah.
Oh, back to tapas.
Because I was aiming.
Because you were aiming?
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. What can you say about that? Apart from, sorry, thank you for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
AtomicHercules.com for your pre-orders. Get on it.
Yes. Dan Butcher?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram @JesterDiablo. Thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth. Wherever you are, we hope you're happy, healthy, safe, and reading or making lots of comics. We love you. So, from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Keep it comics flavoured. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Oh, it'll be a Christmas miracle when it happens.
It will be.
It will be, won't it? Can't wait.
It just goes in your mouth.
Yeah. Oh. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See you later.